continuing our series in Mark. But I have to say, and a few of you have already kind of brought it up to me. For those of you who know me, I'm a huge, huge Raptors fan. I know if you don't know anything about this or basketball, you can just tune me out for the next like 30 seconds. I know Kawhi left. I'm still dealing with it. I'm still processing it. But I know, and it's okay. So, if you could do me a favor, just don't bring it up to me for the next little bit. I just need some, just some time. If you don't know what that means, you can just ignore it, and then you'll be fine. Okay, looking in Mark. Everyone loves a good story. Everyone loves hearing a good story, whether it's reading a book or whether it's watching a movie or whether it's just hearing one of your friends tell a story that happened to them or a friend that they knew. Everyone loves hearing a good story. A story can be used for so many different things. A story can be used to take you away to a place you've never been. A story can be used to teach you something that maybe you didn't know before. A story can be used to distract you when times are tough. A story can be used for so many things. And I love a good story. I love it when, especially a story that is, it's a whole like new world that is created. So I am a huge, huge Lord of the Rings fan. And I love that that whole world is created. And I love the books, the movies, all about it. I love it. Things like Narnia or Star Wars or even the Marvel superhero movies. I love a good story. I love a story where the whole world is created and it's new. And it kind of makes you put yourself in that place. Or there are even true stories, ones that we hear about or read about from history that maybe we think, that I can't believe that happened. I can't imagine being there in a real life thing. That was my dad. My dad loved reading about true stories. But a good story can captivate anyone. If you're telling a good story, someone can sit there and listen and they'll hear you out because a good story can captivate anyone. And you know it's a good story or a good movie or a good book when you're either watching it or you're reading it or you're listening to it and you forget where you actually are. That's when you know it's good. When you forget that you're like in the movies, and then that's when you know it's a good movie. When you forget that you're there watching, like you're so into the story that you think that you're there, that's when it's good. Or when you're reading a book and you don't have no idea what time it is because you're so into the story, that's when you know it's a good story. And Jesus knew this. Jesus knew the power of a good story. Jesus knew that you could captivate someone with a story. When I was in college and I was taking a history class, you had all these textbooks and all that sort of thing, and I found it hard to kind of follow and get like the basic idea of that story. So say we were learning about Alexander the Great, there'd be a textbook I have to read through and it's kind of all over the place. And so what I would always do is I would just Google it and then read the basics on Wikipedia. That's what I would do. Like Wikipedia it, because Wikipedia always is right. And so you read Wikipedia and that would honestly help me just get, okay, I get the basics now, because you can hear, okay, this is the basics, the plot of the story. Bam, there it is. I can understand it. And so Jesus told stories. Jesus told disciples and people who were listening to him, he told stories, not because he wanted to entertain them, but because he wanted them to learn some new things. And these things that he was trying to teach them otherwise might go over their heads or be too big of an idea for them to understand otherwise. And so he told these stories called parables that allowed his hearers to understand ideas and concepts that otherwise they may not have been able to. And so we're going to look at one of these stories or one of these parables today. Actually, two quick ones in Mark. So it's Mark 4, and it's chapter 4, verse 26. And he said, "The kingdom of God is as if a man should scatter seed on the ground. He sleeps and rises night and day, and the seed sprouts and grows. He knows not how the earth produces by itself, first the blade, then the ear, then the full grain in the ear. But when the grain is ripe, he puts in the sickle because the harvest has come." And he said, "With what can we compare the kingdom of God? Or what parable shall we use for it? It is like a grain of mustard seed, which when sown on the ground is the smallest of all the seeds on the earth. Yet when it is sown up, it grows and becomes larger than all the garden plants and puts out large branches so that the birds of the air can make nests in it, in its shade." With many such parables, he spoke to the word to them as they were able to hear it. He did not speak to them without a parable, but privately to his own disciples, he explained everything. So he has two gives two examples, two stories, two parables that we're going to look at and then things that we can learn from that. And so the first thing that we can learn from this and take away for ourselves is that our job is to plant the seed. So in the parable Jesus tells first in the story, he tells about a farmer who wakes up, he goes, he plants his seed, and then it goes in the earth and it grows. So this is a story that anyone would be able to understand. Like even anyone who is the least educated would understand, okay, yeah, I get that. I get that this, you know, the farmer goes out, he puts the seed in the ground. He doesn't really know how it grows. It just grows, right? With the proper water and sun, it's going to grow. So anyone would understand and see the picture that Jesus is painting. And then he explains how the farmer can get the soil ready. He plants the seed, but no matter how hard the farmer works, he does not make it grow. No matter how hard the farmer works, he does not make it grow. He plants the seed. And he goes further and explains about the mustard seed, that although it's small, it's the smallest of all the seeds, when planted, it can grow and becomes very, very large. And again, this is a thought that anyone hearing could understand. They could hear that and say, yeah, I get that. So what you're saying is even something small can grow into something very big. People would understand what he's trying to say. And the truth that we can gather from this is that although we may not be farmers, maybe some of us are, our job as Christians is to witness and go tell people about Jesus, but all we can do is plant the seed. We don't make it grow. Our job is to plant the seed, but we don't make it grow. And I don't know about you, but at times I can feel this like immense pressure that I kind of put on myself, that if I have like family members or friends that don't know Jesus, I put this like pressure that I have to like save them. Like I have to, you know, if I do it in a creative enough way, if I tell them about Jesus enough, maybe if I keep bringing it up or if I kind of try to root everything back to Jesus, then maybe one day if I'm funny enough or whatever, that they'll accept, kind of hear what I'm saying. And I put this pressure on myself. Maybe that's just because I'm a pastor, but I even remember as a kid, like, you know, I'd have friends that didn't know who Jesus was, and I grew up in a Christian home, and so it was kind of foreign to me. It's like I was in church, like, all the time. And so if I met a friend that didn't know about, like, God, I'd be like, what? Like, you don't go to church? Like, did your parents don't take you? And it was just this confusing thing to me, and then I'd be like, oh, I gotta tell them. Like, and I'd feel this pressure on myself. But all that I'm able to do is plant seeds. All I'm able to do is tell them about Jesus, and that's all that I can do. I'm not going to make them decide. I can't force them into a choice. I can plant seeds, seeds like being there for them in hard times, seeds like not hiding my faith from them, seeds like having conversations openly about my beliefs and what I think and where I'm at myself. That's all I can do. And when I think of that, it's actually a pretty freeing thought that although we have a responsibility as believers, that the results are not up to us. Although we have a responsibility, the results are not up to us. I want you to imagine for a second there's this huge test that you have to take, and your teacher tells you, listen, I'm not even gonna mark the test. The only thing I'm gonna grade you on is how you study and how you prepare. Like all the pressure that you'd be feeling about test is gone. All I'm grading you on is how you prepare. Now you could try to fake it, right? You could just have the book open, kind of like when you're in school and teacher's like, okay, it's free period, you know, study for your test. And you're like, you know, book open and then like phone out and you're texting, you know, like this. Youth, I know you guys do it. I did it too. You're sitting there like that, right? You could fake it, but the person who's grading you would know. They would know if you're actually preparing, if you're actually studying. All the stress, all the anxiety, all the worries of that test would be gone because all you think, hey, as long as I prepare, I'm good. Like the results of the test that I don't even matter as long as I prepare for it. And that's kind of the picture that we can have with our responsibility. We have to be prepared. We have to educate ourselves. We have to plant the seed, but the results are not up to us. The results are not up to us. Now, all that being said, we still have to be wise. We still have to be smart about when and where we pick our spots to plant those seeds. See, a farmer doesn't just go around any random day and start chucking seeds wherever he wants and goes, all right, hopefully they grow there and there and there. All right, I'm done for the day and I'm good to go. It's kind of like when you're a kid and you're doing chores, and say like your chore was like, okay, clean the bathroom. Like that was my chore. You'd walk in and be like, all right, wipe, 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 wipe. Bathroom's clean. I'm good to go. Like, and my mom would come in and go, you didn't clean it. Yeah, look, there's like, I wiped it. Like it's clean, right? Like a farmer doesn't just walk around and chuck seeds wherever they think. Like they take time. They wait for a specific time of the year that they know, okay, I want to plant right now because this is a good time where it's going to grow. They look for spots that are going to get sunlight. They look for spots that have good soil. They don't just throw it down wherever they think is good at the time and say, okay, I'm done. I've done my job. I've planted my seeds. There we go. I'm good. No, they put in effort and they wait for the best time. They look for the best spots to produce the best crops. And we need to do the same ourselves. We need to be waiting and looking for the best opportunities to have those conversations with our family, our friends, our coworkers. We have to be looking for those opportunities because honestly, there is a bad time and a place for us to try to plant those seeds. There is a bad time and place for us to try to plant those seeds. And I think you know what I'm getting at. If someone's going through a hard time, and maybe you talked to them before they made that choice and you said, hey, I don't think this is a good idea, and then it turns out to be bad, like, and they come to you upset, it's not the time to say, told you so. That's not going to go well for you. That's not going to go well for you. There is a bad time and place. I remember one time when I was in school, in Bible college, we were playing basketball, and there was a bunch of people there, and we were playing, and my friend, he fell and he twisted his ankle, like sprained his ankle really, really bad. And we found out later, he actually like chipped a piece of his bone in his ankle. So like it was really, really bad. And so he went down and he was like, you know, yelling. And in the course of his yelling, he released some words that were not appropriate. We're at Bible college, and so you'd think everyone's like, oh, but everyone kind of, most people understand, like he's like in serious pain, right? And so I'm not going to walk over and say, excuse me, you know? And so he kind of walks, gets off the court, and he's in real big pain. But this one girl decided that, you know, she needed to let him know. And so she walks over to him and says, you know, you really shouldn't swear. And my friend, and I don't even, like, he's a pretty quick-wit guy, and so I'm thinking like, oh no, this is going to be bad. And all he says, I don't think he even realizes what she's saying. And he says, it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. So at that point, you think hopefully she'd say, okay, he's hurting, I'm going to leave. No. So she said, I swear this is exactly how it happened. She says to him, well, you know, Jesus didn't swear when he was on the cross. And I'm like, oh no, like this is going to be bad. And my friend immediately looks up and goes, oh yeah, were you there? No, but I don't care what you say. And that was pretty good. I'm like, good for you, man. Like that was, you know, but there is a bad time and a bad place to try to plant those seeds, right? Like he is in pain, screaming in pain, his ankle is swelling up. Like, that is not the time to say, hey man, you know, you should really watch out what you say and when Jesus was on the cross, that's a bad time. That's not the opportunity, right? There is a bad time and place to plant seeds. And I think sometimes we need to be aware of that and kind of pick our spots and be wise about, okay, when are we gonna try to speak to a situation and when are we not? When is going to yield the best results and when is not? Because our job as Christians is to be faithful and God will handle the results. That's our job. Our job is to be faithful and God is going to handle the results. Sometimes we feel like we have to handle the results. God's going to handle those. The second thing that we can learn is that we then need to trust God with those results. Because God is going to handle the results. We may not like those results, but we have to trust God with them. Because we know that our job is to plant the seeds, but we need to trust God with the outcome. When a farmer plants seeds, he doesn't know which ones are going to grow and which ones won't, but he plants them and he trusts the rain will come and the sun will shine and they will grow. He doesn't know, okay, yeah, that one, you know, I'm not even gonna plant this seed. Forget that one. This one, no, this one looks good. Okay, I'll plant. He doesn't know which ones are gonna grow, which ones are not gonna grow, but he trusts that the rain's gonna come, the sun's gonna shine, and it's gonna grow. In verse 27, it says, the farmer knows not how it grows. it's almost as if it's saying that it grows in secret, right? Because a farmer doesn't just, you know, all right, plant the seeds. All right, grab a seat and watch. Here we go. This is going to be awesome. I'm going to watch this corn grow. That's not what a farmer does. A farmer goes about all his other tasks that he's doing. And if he gets to a point where maybe one crop isn't growing as good, he's going to look and see, okay, what can I do to tweak that? How can I help that along? We don't always get to see the results of our faithfulness. If we have a conversation with a coworker or a friend or a family member about our faith, we don't always get to see the results. We don't always get to see what's going on in someone's heart. Most times, like the crops, it happens in secret. Most times it happens slowly over a process in secret, and you don't really know what that person's going through when you had that conversation. We need to trust God with the results. And that's hard to do. I don't know about you, but sometimes I can really question God's timing. Sometimes, especially with, you know, with as a job as a pastor, where if I, you know, I see an opportunity where maybe a student or a friend or someone is, you know, doesn't know Jesus and they have an opportunity to hear about him, and I'm thinking, this is it. Like, this is going to be it. This is good. And I'm kind of watching. And I don't know if it's just me, but if I have someone like that I really want to experience Jesus, and say they're in a church service or a youth service, I kind of just like watch them and I'm like, oh, are they going to do it? Are they going to? You know, like, are they going to respond? Like, is that hand going up? No, they're just itching. Okay, fine, we're all right. But you really want it to happen, right? And you're thinking, this would be perfect. Oh, this would be awesome. And then it doesn't happen. And I question, I'm like, God, don't you know that would have been the great time? That would have been awesome. Like, we were so prepared for it, God. Like, if you would have, you know, moved in that moment, that would have been, you know, just the best time you could have done it. But we question God's timing. In the second parable, it also illustrates the idea of the mustard seed, that even something that's super small can grow very big. And it lets us know that even small things can have a great impact. Even something small that we can do can have a great impact. A lot of you would know this story. I think I've told it before, but someone in my life who made a great impact on me was when I was interning when I was in college was a pastor named Gavin. He was a youth pastor. And I can honestly say that I probably would not be in the spot that I am now as a youth pastor without him. He was instrumental in helping me along and encouraging me and giving me advice, and he was a huge part of my life. But what's interesting with Gavin is that he didn't grow up in the church. His family wasn't Christians, but he had a friend when he was in high school invite him to youth. He had a friend in high school say, you want to come to youth? And then because of that, Gavin accepted Jesus, felt the call, became a pastor, and so on and so forth, and then impacted me. And so it's crazy to me to think that, you know, a teenage boy telling someone, hey, you want to come to youth, can have such a great impact. We don't know what small thing that we do that can have a great impact. And that's what Jesus is illustrating here with the mustard seed. And the last thing we need to do, what we can learn from this story, is that we need to be prepared for the harvest. In verse 29, it says, hey, when the grain is ripe, he uses the sickle and he produces the harvest. And that's making reference to Joel chapter 3, verse 13. It says, put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Go in, tread, for the winepress is full, the vats overflow, for their evil is great. That's what he's referencing. He's saying, hey, the harvest is ready. When it's ready, you put in and you go for it. We also see in Matthew chapter 9, verse 37, Jesus says, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So we need to be prepared. Jesus is careful choosing his words here. He's speaking in parables so that people can understand. Even in the passage we read in Mark, it says afterwards he would talk to the disciples so they could understand what he's meaning. See, what Jesus is saying is building to the idea that anyone who believes in him can be saved. See, at this time, the Israelites were waiting for a king to come and save them and defeat their enemies. There had been prophecies about Jesus' coming, and the Israelites, they were ready. They were ready for this promised king to come, defeat their enemies, and then they were going to be this great nation, and they were going to be, you know, kind of over everyone. And I can't blame them for thinking that was going to happen. If you were told, like, yeah, there's going to be this king that's going to come and save us and deliver us, like, you would be ready for someone, okay, they're going to come and defeat the enemies. That's what we see in history. That's kind of what everyone would envision. So I don't blame them for thinking that way. But that's not what happened. Can you imagine that what they're thinking? Because they're thinking, yeah, this person's going to come and defeat our enemies, but instead Jesus is like, no, I'm going to save your enemies and you. That would throw you off. Imagine as a kid, you're like, say, getting beat up by some bully. And when you're a kid, like, your dad is like, oh, my dad can beat up anyone, right? And so then your dad comes and you're like, that's it. You're done. Like, kid, you're done. My dad's here. And then instead your dad's like, say the bully's name is Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy, like, I don't want you to get in trouble. Stop doing that. Let's all get some ice cream together, the three of us. You'd be like, Dad, like, no, go, like, hit him. Like, right? That's what the Israelites are like. They're like, no, like, what are you talking about? Like, we're ready for you to defeat our enemies, not save our enemies. Israel is ready for Jesus to make an immediate impact. But what Jesus is saying doesn't just apply for us today, but he was hinting at what he was doing as well. You see, Jesus was planting seeds, starting small, but one day his kingdom would offer shelter to many. Jesus didn't want to come and defeat all their enemies. He was coming to plant seeds so that one day all people could be saved, that everyone could be saved. So what does us being prepared look like today? What does us being prepared look like today? Because it's easy to say, hey, be prepared. And you're like, yep, I'm prepared. Thanks, I'm good to go. What does that look like? It looks like us being in prayer for people. When we're in prayer for people, it makes us way more aware of the things that they're going through and the responsibility that we have. It looks like us looking for opportunities to interact with people. Not trying to avoid them, like, oh, I see that person that I somewhat know in the store, but I don't have time, so I'm just going to, like, you know, go around the long way so I don't see them, right? Looking for opportunities to interact with people. It looks like serving in areas that can impact people. It looks like creating a space for people in our lives, not being so busy that if someone needed us, we couldn't help them in any way. Oh, sorry, I have no time for anyone else. It looks like loving our neighbors. That's why we did that neighboring study. It looks like inviting people to church or life group. That's what us being prepared is. Simple things, like if you're talking to one of your coworkers and they say, oh, like, what are you doing this week? Like, you ask them, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I have no plans. Oh, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to church on Sunday. You're more than welcome to come with me if you have no plans. Looking for ways we can invite people. So I want to close with this. This week, as we go about all the things that we have on the go, let's be reminded that the freedom we can have knowing that Jesus does the work. Let's be reminded that we have a responsibility, but we can live in freedom, that Jesus does the work, that all we need to do is plant seeds. But when we act like we have the power to save people, or that we're the responsible ones to save them, what we actually do is discount the power of the gospel. When we live like we're the ones that save people, we discount the power of the gospel. When in actuality, we need to live lives expecting that the gospel can change lives, because it can. Sometimes we forget and we live like the gospel doesn't have that power, but it does. You see, as a youth pastor, I have to be okay with that. No one's faith is going to last because of me. No one's faith is going to last because of me. If a student's faith is going to last, it's going to be because the gospel transformed their life. But I can be excited about the idea that I have a responsibility that can introduce them to that power. The gospel changes lives, but we can show people the gospel. So let's be reminded that this week, our job is to plant seeds, and there's a good time for that, and there's a bad time for that. We need to trust God with the results of what we do. We may think we know better, most of us probably do, but we don't. We need to trust God with the results, and we need to be prepared. We need to be prepared for opportunities that arise.